Joining me for a look at the day's markets action now is Dale Hutchison from APSA Asset Management. Dale, thanks so much for your time this evening. So just as I read, momentum from the US's strong earnings season is beginning to fade as investors bet that key central banks are likely to increase interest rates. We have a few companies come out propping things up all over again. I mean, it's all becoming quite dizzying at this point, isn't it?
Well, I think you've had positive earnings surprises, but those positive earnings surprises are less than what we saw in the second quarter. And I think that's worth bearing in mind. And I think, you know, you've seen it, just about every second company or every company almost report, you know, issues around supply chains and cost pressures. So I think that's certainly going to weigh on sentiment. But yes, I think, you know, on balance, I still think the earnings momentum has been pretty strong.
Yeah. So how much of a defensive stance necessary here? We've had today the ECB and Christine Lagarde specifically saying that inflation, yes, will be high for even longer, but she's pushed back against market bets that any of these price pressures are going to be triggering an interest rate hike as soon as next year. Or are we looking at the US and the EU as completely different animals at this stage?
I think you need to distinguish a little bit. I think if we look at the ECB, I do think she was definitely trying to downplay the likelihood of rate hikes, saying the market's getting a little ahead of itself. And then, you know, when we contrast that with the US, I mean, I think that US GDP number was a bit disappointing. But, you know, the Fed tends to have a dual mandate of growth and inflation. And, you know, if growth is slowing, maybe the market's going to start to anticipate that, you know, the likelihood of them raising rates, you know, is probably diminishing. And yeah, I think that's worth bearing in mind. But it's clear if you look further across the rest of the world, and in particular in emerging markets, we're going to probably see rates rising. And I think, you know, even looking at our own economy, I think most pundits are probably expecting, you know, our Reserve Bank to raise rates next month.
Let's go back to that Q3 GDP number stateside for a minute, Dale. Slower growth in Q3, Commerce Bank in a note saying that was as a result of normalization of spending activity and the significant bottlenecks that remain on the supply chains. Do you share that view?
I do think it is weighing. I think supply chain disruption is definitely going to hold back economic activity and growth. So that is pulling things down. So I do buy that argument.
Do you see an opening up starting to emerge as soon as the fourth quarter? Because that's where the note took the argument eventually, saying that there are signs of better development in Q4.
Well, I think the uncertainty lies around how we see this transition into, you know, greater services spend. And the concern is that services spend is going to happen into a tighter labor market and what that might mean. So, yes, I think we can see an acceleration of growth in the services segment. We've already seen that coming through to some extent. And that's going to offset potentially declines that we see on the goods side. But it potentially comes with risks around inflation on the wages side.
Yeah, of course, something's got to offset things on the good side of things, especially where you're having to deal with these supply chain bottlenecks. So, you know, some of those woes have continued to haunt markets, and some analysts expect the challenges to persist into next year. Let's take a look at what Freddie Laid had to say.
It's a really meaningful impact, and I don't think it's going away anytime too soon. I think H2 next year is probably the most likely.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was reading some research by one investor recently who was saying, you know, if you think that we've got disruption in markets right now, supply chain disruption in goods markets, then next year we're going to see a return of demand for services. This was one assessment, and that's going to lead to further disruption because labor markets are really tight. It does seem as if the hangover from the pandemic in terms of the economies and the scarring of economies and the disruption to economies is something that's going to take a long time to work through.
I think that's right. I think there's a few things to remember, though. The first one is that most of the supply chains at the moment are because of an imbalance in the supply and demand within each sector and within inventory and demand channels. And it's really because the demand is so strong. So it's a sort of good problem to have. It's hard because companies aren't quite fulfilling their full potential in terms of earning what they could be earning in this demand environment. But it is generally because of a demand-led pull through the system that we're seeing these shortages and the friction. And I think it will remain choppy for a number of years post-pandemic. And I think there's going to be a couple of features that come out of this. Firstly, stronger businesses being stronger, being better able to manage that process, better able to execute on their inventory and deliveries. And also the larger companies, just all we've heard through earnings season this year as well, the last couple of weeks, has been about the large businesses and the benefits of scale, the benefits of global businesses. And I think that's tragic for the world of entrepreneurialism and everything else. But I think it's very, very clear for large cap investors like ourselves that there's actually a one-off benefit coming out of this recession. Large cap businesses will do better than small caps. And I think that's sort of counterintuitive to most people because historically small caps have the stronger rally. But we've always believed, and I think it's coming through in numbers now, that the large caps will benefit.
Okay, that's interesting. One of the other things we've been tracking through this earnings season has been the extent to which COVID concerns are still dominating the thinking of management or not. And I'm thinking of some of the hospitality businesses that operate globally or supply hospitality, like beer businesses. You know, some of those getting a reminder that there are parts of Asia that remain very under-vaccinated, and if you're either producing there or selling there, that could still disrupt. What have you been taking away from conversations with management about COVID's ability to still disrupt?
It's definitely still disrupting. For example, you just had the Carlsberg CEO on talking about his business in Vietnam. Heineken had the same thing in their numbers earlier this week. You know, Vietnam is a very closed economy at the moment. They are still right in the middle of their COVID pandemic. You can't buy alcohol in many cases. You certainly can't go out to restaurants. And that's really, really impacting sales in that region. And it's quite a big region for both of those businesses. I think the key thing to note is obviously we've been through this already in other countries. We now know the shape of the playbook. We know how long it takes and we know the rough demand side on the other side. So they are concerned about it at present. They're doing what they can to mitigate, but they know there's light at the end of the tunnel because we've shown them that elsewhere. Yeah.
That was the CEO of Latitude, Freddie Lay. So, Dale, let's take a look where this, debate or assessment rages on services versus goods. Some interesting commentary coming through there and pointing specifically to, your brewers. AB InBev today saying it's optimistic about its prospects from here on out. It's upped its core profit growth forecast for this year. Do you think it's underestimating the COVID disruption that could well risk any of the equations it's laid out today?
Well, I think they've basically narrowed the previous guidance they'd given. I think they've given guidance 8 to 12% and they've taken it to 10 to 12% on that EBITDA level. So, yes, I think why they're able to do that is they tend to hedge out their costs 12 months out. And because they do that, I think it gives them some degree of certainty going into this last quarter as to what their cost dynamics are going to look like. So they've got confidence. And obviously, looking at the current sales dynamics that are taking place, the price increases they've put through, I think they've got a fair degree of confidence, and I would have that confidence with them. I think, looking beyond that, obviously markets like Brazil, we've seen significant increases in inflation. And I suppose the only concern one has to have in a number of these markets is, how big is that consumer wallet to continue to allocate sufficient percentage of that wallet towards beer in their case. Yeah. I think they're a really efficient supply chain operator. So that comment in your previous insert was, the big guys know how to manage these risks. And I think they have seen disruptions. We saw it in terms of mix in the US, for example, where suddenly they were short of cans. And we saw even Nampak from South Africa exporting cans into the US to meet the can demand because people were drinking more at home than out. So I think they will manage those supply chain disruptions and those that we can't predict at this particular point in time. The cost side, however, could continue to be an issue. And yes, they will hedge that, but eventually they have to capture it in price increases. And the key will be, will the consumer be able to absorb all of it?
Yeah. In this environment, Dale, Heineken's talks with Distell have come up against some challenge. We've had the PIC, which is, of course, the second largest shareholder in Distell, asking for a higher price. It's looking for 200 Rand a share. It's 11% higher than Distell's closing price. How have you digested this that's emerged today?
Well, I certainly think that, you know, there are ways, looking at the cost structures and the cost of capital for Heineken, that could potentially make it make sense for it to even pay that 200 level. So I don't think it's a significant premium to where the share is currently trading to take it off the, take that sort of transaction off the cards.
Absolutely. Well, I want to shift focus to some earnings reports that have filtered through. EOH out with numbers, first operating profit being reported in 3 years. Is this a company that's potentially back on your watch list? The tide seems to be nicely turning. So is that a good enough indication of where you see things headed, today's results?
I probably still want to see a little bit more water flow under this bridge. I think, you know, to management's credit, they've done a really good job in what I think has been a very difficult situation. They weren't responsible for the woes that EOH faced, and they've and unfortunately it has just taken a fair bit of time to address all of those issues. But I think a fair bit of, you know, confidence has been lost in the name, and I think it will take a little bit of time for that confidence to be rebuilt.
One won't hold it against you, the kind of skepticism that you hold, especially where we've even had positive earnings fail to move some in the global arena, despite European banks reporting upbeat earnings this week. Aviva's Peter Fitzgerald is still not convinced as he reduces his exposure in that sector. Here's more on that.
Banks' earnings will improve as interest rate margins improve and as yield curves potentially steepen. I suppose our challenge, and particularly when we look at the European banking market, is that these are businesses that are structurally challenged from technology companies to some extent, from incumbents that are moving their businesses online. You have significant cost bases in terms of their real estate and branch networks. So this is an area that, yes, you've got what I call some of those macro factors that are supportive. And yes, there will be a duration play to be made within banks. But our view is that there are some material challenges to that sector also.
That was Peter Fitzgerald from Aviva. Dale, like I say, you know, some would say warranted your skepticism on a player like EOH, where it still has a lot to prove. It still has a lot to see play out. How are you feeling about European banks? Because Peter Fitzgerald there not being moved by the earnings, despite how, you know, optimistic it has made investors in some quarters.
Well, you know, I think you've got to probably look at, you know, comments again by Lagarde from the ECB. You know, if you have a very moderate outlook for rate hikes in the ECB, well, you're not going to get that positive endowment effect. So maybe the optimism around earnings is going to be diminished. But let's assume that those earnings are going to come through with some positive endowment effects, you know, as rates rise. That will be supportive. I think the comments about these are businesses that are facing, you know, headwinds in terms of, you know, the structure of the industries they're in. I think that is very true. You know, they unfortunately have big legacy systems often that require maintenance costs, and that costs money. So, you know, it's very easy for new entrants to come in and disrupt them and do it on, with a lower cost base. So I think that is definitely true. So I think it's a world in which I think you have to look at companies individually and assess their readiness to address the new challenges of an evolving market. However, also want to just caution that a lot of the regulators don't want to see big banks fall over suddenly. So, and certainly innovative tech often comes with little regulation, and regulation has to play catch up.
Yeah.
So I do think there will be some interventions by regulators and central banks in particular to give some defense to these incumbents, because I think it could be very destabilizing. Absolutely. If they were allowed to collapse quickly.
As we wrap things up, Dale, very quickly, your elevator pitch here, 20 seconds, I'm counting down. What's your stock pick this evening?
My stock pick is Quilter. I think as a South African investor, it is giving you Rand Hedge exposure. But that Rand Hedge exposure is into a stock that on valuation basis is looking very attractive. If I look, I think revaluing the stock close to 40 Rand. Certainly the whole wealth management market in the UK has growth potential given the demographics and the aging pensioning population.
Yeah.
So there's lots of growth dynamics taking place there.
Let's leave it there. Dale, thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. That, of course, Dale Hutchison from APSA Asset Management.